Thursday Night Football with John Giles.
Johnny Giles is a national treasure. When he speaks, I mean, I'm like, yes, yes, yes. When he's on the show, I was in the car the other day. I parked the car and I sprinted into the house and turned on the radio. I love listening to him. I love Johnny Giles.
John Giles, every Thursday at 7:30 p.m. on OTB Sports Radio, live 24/7 on the Go Loud app. The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
So Brian Kerr was alongside me for tonight's game at the Etihad. And Brian, it's not unusual for there to be a bit of a hangover after a good party. 4-0 to Manchester City. Were you expecting there to be quite that much of a hangover for Liverpool?
No, I expected Manchester City to win tonight. I just didn't think that Liverpool would have quite the edge to their game that would be required. And remember, these two teams are exceptional sides. The number of points they got last year was 98-97, wasn't it? But Manchester City 98 and Liverpool 97. That's exceptional in top division of English football. They got so many games. Obviously, City got 100 the year before. But I think once you drop a couple of percent below the standards that you set on a week-in, week-out basis, then you're going to have a performance like Liverpool tonight. And I don't think that... I wouldn't say the build-up to the game was the type of preparation that they normally have. I'm sure the Klopp tried to ensure that the training that they went through, their organisational stuff and patterns of play, and let's expose Manchester City when they play out from the back, squeeze them, try and intercept something high up the pitch. When they attack us, can we counter and play long ball over the top? I think that work was done. But once they lost the first goal and the second goal, I felt the level of their effort and the quality of their play just disintegrated really by their standards, and they were well beaten.
Yeah, you think of the level that Liverpool got to at Anfield earlier in the season, or even the game they were beaten at the Etihad 2-1 last season. The pace of that game.
Yeah.
Well, tonight was really entertaining and very open, and it could have been 8-3 to Manchester City and it might have been fair enough. It was a different type of game. There wasn't that real edge that you would want.
No, there wasn't. There wasn't the same... Yeah, there was no cutting edge. I mean, there's no nothing about the results has any great effect on the season overall. It might have an effect on the future, on the morale of the Manchester City players, in terms of Klopp wanting to inspire his players to play well more consistently over the remaining six games. It may be that Guardiola would look at some of the players he played tonight who haven't been regulars in the team, like Laporte, obviously because of injury. Mendy, who has been very much a bit player because of injury the last few seasons. But most of all, I think young Foden has kind of come into a really big game now tonight and done his stuff. We discussed it earlier where I'd seen him in the game at Manchester United, which was a big game, the derby match. He played wide on the right just before the close down, the lockdown due to the virus. And he was quite ineffective in the intensity of that match. Against Manchester United, Old Trafford, big occasion, playing wide. Whereas tonight, he looked very comfortable in the game tonight. Would he be as comfortable? Would he have been as comfortable if Robertson was right at it tonight? Because Robertson made several mistakes. He got torn so easy on the goal. It turned inside out by Foden, that beautiful little 1-2. So the answer to that still remains hanging in the air. Do we see these teams playing against each other again next season?
That's the problem with this game. Everything feels unanswered until we see them again next season. And Liverpool don't really have a meaningful match for another 2 months now until the season starts again. So a lot, and maybe too much, is going to be read into what happened tonight. Like, are there things that Jurgen Klopp will have seen tonight in any way that will concern him ahead of next season?
I wouldn't think he'd be over-concerned. I mean, he extracted the maximum from those players this year. I mean, one of his great qualities is improving these players. When he signed many of them, I mean, when he signed Andy Robinson, there wasn't any great hullabaloo about it when he signed him for Hull. For maybe it was 8 million, maybe it was 10 million, maybe it was 6 million. you know, there was nobody saying, yes, Van Dijk, yes, the goalkeeper, Alisson, they were signed for massive amounts. And people said they made the difference. But he also made the difference of improving those individual players playing, Alexander Arnold leaving them in the team, the improvement in Henderson as the years go on. Fabinho, who was a bit of a bit player last year when he first came to the club, didn't really establish himself. At the second half of the season, began to look a better player. Now he's a first choice. He has to be in the team.
Probably their best player tonight.
Yeah, maybe, but yeah, there wasn't. Like, it would have been easy enough. But you know, he's improved each of these players. So he'd be looking. I don't think he'd be looking at them with too much of a jaundiced eye tonight. He'd be kind of going, hold on, these guys have been, what they've done, winning the Champions League last year. Yes, one match competition. We won the Super Cup. We won the World Championship, winning a couple of games to win that. But they've done it, and they won the Charity Shield. All those things. But the ultimate prize for them was winning the Premier League. 30 years since anyone had done it for Liverpool. So he's not going to be too critical of them tonight. You might be disappointed. You bring on Keita and Origi, and they don't really have much influence on the game. Williams comes on and he does a few bits, but you're going to look at them as the season goes on. You mentioned Harvey Elliott to me during the commentary. They'll get a go, I think, between now and the end of the season, but they'll want to win another game or two. And I think we'll find they'll be brought on in matches if the matches are being won.
Yeah.
I don't think we'll see them starting in matches unless he thinks we can win this with eight of our best and two or three of the younger players.
Geez, Manchester City are a hard team to sum up. You watch them there. Like, are Manchester City a team that, when there is a weakness in the opposition, there's no better team, certainly in English football, maybe in worldwide club football right now, than Manchester City exposing a weakness? But when it's tough, is that where the problem still is? Is that where the doubts still are? Like we saw last week against Chelsea, that when Chelsea actually went, like, they've lost eight. It's hard to see that performance with a team that have lost eight times this season.
Well, you know, we still analyse the games, tonight. How many opportunities did they cough up to Liverpool? If Liverpool had been that bit sharper tonight, they weren't sharp. They messed up. I mean, Salah was in. He hits the goalkeeper with it. When you were right, you spotted in commentary. You said your goalkeeper Edison was a long way off the line, and we've often seen Salah chip the keeper when he's
did
off
it
the line.
Him.
That's right. And in the past, but he didn't do it tonight, and he went for a high shot, which the goalkeeper saved. It falls for Mane, and he misjudges his run and hits off his shin and goes out wide. There was one in the second half where he ran over the ball and he tried to take it past the goalkeeper, and Salah missed the chance where he came to the inside. He hits the post, it comes back out. But they got several other good opportunities that they didn't make Manchester City pay for the mistakes. And a lot of the mistakes were either the high line where the centre halves were caught out of position, didn't react to the pace of the attackers, or else it was in trying to play the build up play through Rodri or through Gundogan in the middle of the field, and the pass was intercepted under pressure from Liverpool players. And we've seen Liverpool doing that to them before. We've seen other teams do it to them more by sitting back, allowing them to come on and counter-attacking. I think of Traore with Wolves, how he was devastating on the counter-attack in both games when Wolves beat them 2-0, 3-0, but 3-2 rather. So, you know, those things are there. But those deficiencies are also part of the joy of watching City, that they take so many risks, that he is such a purist of a manager. There's very few games where you'll see City deliberately sit in a 4-5-1 or a 4-3-3 with the two wide front players sit. It's always, we want to dominate possession and we'll take risks and play it out. There's only one game, I think, with Liverpool last year where they played it fairly tight and the back four sat in place and it finished up 0-0 at Anfield. And it was one of the few times where I saw him, where I've so rarely seen them compromise on the idea we'll dominate possession and we'll play our game and to hell with the opposition, even if they're Liverpool. That day they did. So I think if you did that a little bit more often, they would have more consistent results against the better teams. This year, they didn't do that well against the better teams. But, you know, the Champions League has to be the holy grail for them this season.
We've touched on how good Phil Foden was. Kevin De Bruyne tonight as well. Every time he got on the ball, some of his slide rule passes, taking four or five players out of it, were just out of this world. We're getting towards that who's footballer of the year, and there was a real momentum behind Jordan Henderson before the break. Maybe Virgil van Dijk is once again the outstanding player, but in terms of talent, it's hard to get anyone to match De Bruyne. Is he your footballer of the year?
I hadn't thought about it too much until you started bringing it up during the match tonight, because I don't have a vote in it. Like, I have votes in some things.
I voted on the World 11 and the World Player of the Year.
Yeah, through World Soccer I have. But, you know, I haven't thought about this one in great depth. But, you know, I said to you during the match, and you corrected me, that it often comes from the team that wins the league. And you pointed out that in the past 2 years has been Van Dijk, probably because of his overall performance, and Liverpool won the Champions League. And the players' votes would have been before that anyway. The soccer writers one would be after that. So Salah, I think the previous year when he was rattling in goals game after game to game, he won it. This year, you know, De Bruyne has had seasons where last season was a difficult season for him with injury. This season he's come back fresher and not only been outstanding for Manchester City, been outstanding for Belgium as well. So I think, you know, I wouldn't have a great problem because of the influence on Van Dijk in Liverpool winning the league. But I think for attack, it's always more difficult to do it in the attacking part of the pitch. And that's why it kind of surprises that Aguero has never won it, you know, but he's not going to win it this year. Because he's been overshadowed by De Bruyne's performance, even though he's top scorer. He's been overshadowed by De Bruyne's performance. And when you look at Liverpool, Salah didn't have as good a season as he's had in the two previous seasons, even though he scored a substantial number of goals. Firmino didn't score enough goals, although he's been brilliant. Sané has had a magnificent season. But would you say he was more important to the team than Henderson and Van Dijk? Probably not. Both Liverpool's fullbacks have been brilliant. The young fullback will get the young player of the league, so that covers him. It'd be unusual for a left back to get it in a season, a championship winning season. So if you want to vote for De Bruyne, you go ahead.
No. I back Jordan Henderson at 20-1.
Okay, well, that's fine. Okay,
so I want you to go with Henderson.
Somebody gives me a vote, I'm voting Jordan Henderson and sharing the spoils.
One last thing. We've had a lot of coverage on the show this week about the League of Ireland and the restart and on, off, and it seems it is now going to restart on the 31st of July. The FAI board have approved the plan that it'll be one down automatically and another team going into a playoff. We had David Rowe from Sligo on Tuesday night, very frustrated with the process behind the scenes and with just 13 more games, the danger that's there for Sligo Rovers as a club. We had Vinnie Perth on saying, well, they wanted 27 games, but it didn't seem too many others did, but that obviously everybody has their own vested interest, so that's the way it's going to be. And then we'd Shamrock Rovers, who were at the centre of all this because they went with the First Division teams.
They're in both leagues.
They're in both leagues, but their vote is only with the Premier Division teams and went with the First Division teams.
But their chairman voted with the First Division teams.
Yes, but explaining their side of the situation, that they never changed their mind and that they voted the way that they felt was right. And then we had a situation where the FAI board, after Niall Quinn had said football was back, saying, well, actually, we're going to delay this and have another look. They've had another look. It looks as though it's back and it's settled, unless the clubs kick up a storm. What have you made of it all?
I've made it all. It's been a very difficult situation for everybody. I think there were too many promises made too early on about the possible financial settlements with the clubs if they got going again. The idea of the streaming being very rewarding, the streaming of matches, and for the public to pay to see them seemed to be one of the main financial incentives or source of where the income was going to come to fund the clubs having matches with no crowds at the game. So I think initially the clubs were probably misled as to the extent of what money would be available. And then obviously there was promises about money that might come from UEFA and FIFA, and that dragged on. till quite recently where the FIFA money came through. It's been a very awkward situation. There's so many different parties with vested interests. You have 10 different businesses in the Premier League. You also have 8 different businesses or 9 different businesses in the second division, Shamrock Rovers, as I said, playing in both leagues, who all have a different modus operandi, but also have different different levels of income and levels of expenditure. And you know, it's quite difficult to manage them unless you know a lot of the personalities involved. I think some of the people in the FAI who are trying to find a solution didn't know the personalities involved and didn't know the industry very well because they weren't involved in it ever before. So I think that made it very difficult, the fact that they hadn't got the experience of League of Ireland. That might have been, it might have made it easier. You also had the issue of the players being, the wages being stopped and depending on the government payouts and so on. And then the PFAI's side of it, where they're fighting for the players' side of it and fighting very strongly and sometimes making, I think, statements that didn't help the whole situation. So, you know, it's been a combination of factors that has led to where we are now, where there was a lot of... I think all the clubs are worn out from the discussions, the number of meetings, as we all know. Zoom meetings aren't so easy on the head and the brain. They are quite draining, even in my own experiences of a few of them. I can only imagine what it's been like handling some of those meetings, to handle them, be involved with them, and try to come up with solutions without sitting around the table face-to-face and looking for a bit of compromise. There's a falseness in that whole area of the Zoom calls, I think. The outcome is there. I think that the Premier League clubs had a very, very good case in saying if there's only half the matches, there should only be half the outcome at the bottom of the table. I don't think that how many clubs have come up from the First Division in recent years and survived and not gone down in either the first year or the second year?
But does this not make it far more competitive, both in the Premier Division and in the First Division, that it'll mean an awful lot of these clubs will have an interest far further into the season? And in terms of the integrity of the league, that if there's only one team going down and there's a fear that maybe one club has thrown in the towel already, that they'll be the team to go down, and suddenly then you're 4 or 5 teams with nothing really to play for.
Yeah, but it's not forever. We're only getting through a short season here to get it over, to get the next one started as quick as we can. The fact that 9 of the Premier clubs voted for something that obviously suited them a little bit. The thing that would have suited the most had there been no relegation and that 2 teams are coming up. But then where do you find a couple of more teams to make a First Division a practical, viable league? They aren't out there. But I think the fact that 9 of the clubs out of 10 voted for something showed a fair degree of unanimity of how they felt about the whole thing. I would have to say, while I admire the clubs in the First Division for battling and scrapping and staying in football, in, you know, what's is often referred to as the Round Ireland League, I still think that the clubs in the Premier League deserve to have a bigger say in what the eventual outcome is. But look at, if it's settled now and decisions been made by somebody that had authority, it seemed like there was far too many groups had authority to have a say in it as well. I got confused about who was making the decision in the end. You know,
look at this.
I'm telling you, leads me on to say, roll on the All Ireland League.
Oh yeah,
and we get on with it. Where is it? Well, where it is, I think there's a lot of support from the clubs. I think there's a lot of support. I think by far the majority of clubs in the Republic are for it. I think the FAI are for it. I think there's been a great move in the NIFL League and the Northern Ireland League of, I think the support is there from the vast majority of clubs in Northern Ireland have accepted a formula for an All-Ireland League that is a very interesting formula and would make every match crucial. While teams would play two rounds within their own league before they go to the All-Ireland League part of it. It's a very interesting solution to the problem where, particularly in the Northern Ireland, they wanted to retain control of the UEFA places from within their own league. So, you know, they're in a bit of disarray in that they haven't come to an agreement for to restart. I think they've accepted they're not going to restart this season. But a lot of the clubs are very disappointed that that's how the outcome has been. I don't think they're over-enamoured with how it's been managed by NIFL and the IFA. And I think among the clubs in Northern Ireland, there's a will to get up and try to find an acceptable arrangement that everyone can go for to get an All-Ireland League. I don't think now is the right time, because obviously the financial structures that need to be in place to back it all, to make it very attractive to the clubs and to make it substantially better than both the individual leagues are at the moment, to improve the standards, to improve the facilities, to have bigger prize money in place. I think everything needs to settle down a little bit after the interruption of COVID to sporting life, to everyday life, to social life, to travelling, to all the aspects of living, really. I think that there needs to be more of a recovery in place where there's more movement of people and that crowds can come back to matches. I mean, that's the most obvious factor in all of this. I mean, what we're all hoping for, if there's a better league and an All-Ireland League comes into place, that there are bigger attendances at games with bigger sponsorship around that, more public interest, better broadcasting deals, all that. But that cannot happen in the current situation where we don't have anyone going to games, and we probably won't have, you know, for the next month or two, and then we have to see where it goes after that.
Well, the word has gone round in Jacor, apparently. There's not 500 tickets for Richmond Park. There's only 499 because Brian Kerr is number one on that list.
Well, if there's a game, I would hope to be able to get in. I don't know under what guise, whether it be as a supporter, as a media person or whatever, but I would really...
You must have an honorary title. Like, do you not have an honorary title?
No, I've been called many things down there, but look, by many people at different clubs. But look, I'd love to get back to a game, a live game in our own league of any description. And the sooner the better. If it gets going by the end of July, that'll be great. And I hope that people are going to be allowed in, whether it's 100 or 500 or 1,000 in some of the grounds. It'll be great to have people back at matches and to get this most awkward of season going again. And obviously finished and prizes won and teams competing in Europe, and we know who's competing for us for next year in Europe as well. So let's get it up and get going again soon.
Here, here. Great stuff as always, Brian.
The OTB Podcast Network.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
It is time to get into Monday's headlines today. But before that, Phil, we may as well focus on what happened last night. Adrian Barry says that there wasn't a huge amount of significance attached to last night. But let me put this to you. How strong is the case for Kevin De Bruyne as Player of the Year after the evidence of last night? The clear evidence that he is the best footballer in the Premier League right now, when you even put him up against the Premier League champions, the runaway Premier League champions, it is clear that Kevin De Bruyne is still the best footballer in the Premier League. Can you make a case for him, a legitimate case for him as Player of the Year?
Yeah, welcome back, Owen. Yeah, of course you can. I mean, he was brilliant last night, and he tends to be brilliant most weeks. But I suppose the argument you could make against him is that he's playing in a team that are 20 points off the Premier League champions. And you'd wonder if he's that amazing a player, why aren't City doing well? But he, as well, you kind of got an insight even in the first 15 minutes of last night's game, and obviously at Stamford Bridge last week, that as good as City are, the way they stroke the ball around, there's vulnerabilities there. There was times, obviously, Mendy has been in the team, and as good as he is going forward, he just isn't part of that unit the way he tends to play players on. He was at fault, obviously, for the Pulisic goal last week as well. So De Bruyne is definitely in with a chance. Obviously, Mo Salah won it a couple of years ago when Liverpool didn't win the Premier League. So it wouldn't be unheard of for a player that's not from the league-winning team not to win it. So I don't know how it's going to be, it's going to come across this season, because obviously if the season had gone ahead as normal, the voting is quite early in the season anyway. So he's definitely in the mix. I suppose he's in the mix with Van Dijk. Henderson was one that was getting mentioned. I think I know Jamie Carragher mentioned Sadio Mane in commentary that he was his player of the season. So I think they're the four that you're looking at.
Well, that was quite an extraordinary departure, I thought, Phil, for an actual Liverpool-aligned person to not say Jordan Henderson for Footballer of the Year. It was almost sacrilege that Jordan Henderson wasn't Jamie Carragher's Player of the Year, because it seemed that he is almost the unanimous choice when we've spoken about Player of the Year this year. And I'm not sure I actually understand that, Phil. Like, I get the aura of Jordan Henderson and how brilliant a captain he's been for Liverpool, but I don't think you can put him into the top two or three players for Liverpool this season. At a stretch, you could possibly pick five players who have been better performers for Liverpool in the Premier League this season, plus Kevin De Bruyne. Like, Jordan Henderson, you could make a case, has come seventh in the running for Player of the Year. Like, has this become a bit of a runaway train that perhaps we can't arrest at this point, that Jordan Henderson is going to get it because he is captain fantastic and it is based on the man of Jordan Henderson and the character of Jordan Henderson rather than the footballer that he is? Like, perhaps that's actually the way these things should be judged, but I'm just saying, if you're judging it on the performances this season, should he actually be in with a legitimate shout? Because that's what he is.
Yeah, well, I think one way I've kind of looked at it, and the reason I wouldn't give it to Henderson, is because I would look at the impact of what would happen to Liverpool if Henderson was out of the team, or if Van Dijk was out of the team, or Mane was out of the team. Of those three players I've mentioned, the player that Liverpool could cope without the most, I think, is Jordan Henderson. I think if you take Mane out, then Liverpool obviously aren't as potent in attack. And then if you take Van Dijk out, they're a lot more vulnerable at the back. And they obviously have cover in midfield. They can play. They have a number of options in there. So I think what's impressed people about Henderson this season is just his leadership and, you know, just that drive that he has and the standard that he sets. And if a player isn't on it, you know, he'll bark at them. And I think that's where they're some of his strongest attributes. And, you know, he's come up with some big moments in certain games. I think back to the Spurs game where he was at fault for the goal at Anfield that they conceded after a couple of minutes to Harry Kane. And, you know, he equalised in the second half, and obviously Liverpool went on to win the game. So, you know, he's a strong character, and he's obviously, you know, he's the voice of that Liverpool team. But no, I can certainly see why some people would go for him, but I can also pick why you wouldn't go for him.
He has to win it, is the thing. Like, I know, I understand the point. Is he technically the best footballer in the Premier League at the minute? Probably not. I don't know the criteria, as like with the All-Star Selection Committee, what are the actual criteria for this? But given what Jordan Henderson has achieved in terms of his role at that Liverpool team, and I know that he he'd moved into favourite for the thing even before COVID, I believe. But like everything that he's done even since that, in terms of organising and pulling a lot of clubs together in terms of like raising money and awareness and all that sort of stuff, I just think you have to look at those factors.
Absolutely. I think as well, there's obviously a lot of emphasis on these awards, and maybe probably too much. And I think obviously there's two of them. There's the Players' Player of the Year, and there's the Football Writers. And the Football Writers one might be a better indicator, because, you know, from what you hear from players, that they're basically, there's a rep that comes into the dressing room, and some of them like will openly talk to other players, like, who are you putting down? Who are you voting for? And, you know, they mightn't put that much thought into it. Whereas the Football Writers obviously will have seen all these players play for the whole season, and they will actually sit down and have a good think about it. So saying that, Sterling got the Football Writers Player of the Year ahead of Van Dijk last season.
Yeah, he could be a minute shout as well, actually, this season. We're going to get into Monday's headlines today, Phil, for anybody who hasn't seen this slot. I think you did pretty well last time we did this. You managed to predict a good few of the unexpected things that were going to happen. So basically, you're going to give us four lines that we're definitely going to see on the back pages of Monday's newspapers. Your first one, very briefly, because we've kind of touched on this already. Liverpool still have 100 points in sight, thanks to home comforts. So Aston Villa on Sunday, Phil. Is this going to be a cakewalk for a resurgent Liverpool after City putting them, waking them up a little bit last night?
Yeah, it was a sobering night for Liverpool. And I think Villa, unfortunately, are going to feel the backlash of it. Obviously, Liverpool have won every home game in the league this season. They're going to want to continue that. Doesn't help that Villa are not Manchester City either. And Liverpool are a different animal at Anfield. And I tend to be hurting a little bit. Obviously, they're champions. It doesn't matter. But they'll just be a little bit annoyed. Not the fact that they lost the game, but, you know, there is people saying they were a little bit humiliated last night. So I'm sure Klopp, you could see it in his post-match interview last night after with Jeff Shreves, that he was angry, and there was shades of Tony O'Donoghue and Martin O'Neill in that one. But, yeah, no, I think they'll bounce back and they'll... beat Villa.
Is there any chance we're reading that one wrong, Phil? Like, that obviously Liverpool are now a team that maybe they start to, we saw some of the young players come off the bench last night, maybe he leans a bit more on that. Villa are obviously fighting for their lives. Is there any chance that, because it came up in commentary last night as well, that Villa are going to feel this wrath at the weekend? Is there any chance we're reading that wrong?
I think if you look back at the performance for Liverpool against Palace, that's kind of what I'm expecting. He could make a few changes, but I don't think he'll make that many changes, because, you know, he stuck up for his players after the match, and he'd probably say, right, lads, I'm after sticking up for you. I'm going to pick you again. You have to go out and prove me wrong and show that Thursday was just a little bit of a one-off. And even though they lost 4-0 last night, they actually could have scored three or four goals. If they'd lost that game 6-4, it wouldn't have been a surprise.
Next headline. United could give Liverpool and City a run fair, F-E or with a capital F, their money next season. Bruno Fernandes continues to pull the strings for Manchester United. It's Manchester United against Bournemouth tomorrow at 3 o'clock, Phil. I can pretty tell, it's pretty easy to tell what's going to happen here, according to you.
Yeah, obviously. Well, Bournemouth look dead and buried now, losing 4-1 to Newcastle. One thing they always did under Eddie Howe was to score goals. That's no longer happening. They've always conceded them. Manchester United are in great form. They're on this unbeaten run of 15 games in all competitions. Obviously, since Bruno Fernandes arrived, they've been a different looking side. I'll be honest with you, I didn't see this going so well from I'd seen him playing for Sporting Lisbon a good few times, and he looked like a player who just wasn't interested in being there. But maybe that's exactly what it was. He was just thinking, you know, I want to get out, and when I join a new club, I'll show them exactly what I'm made of. But now United have a few weapons in the artillery, where obviously Pogba's back in the team, but opposition defenders now have to think of a few different players. Whereas the criticism for United was great going forward on the break because they have pace, but if you just put a low block in against them, they're not going to be able to unlock the defence. But that's gone now, and you just see Fernandes, even his goal the other night, the first goal, obviously it took a bit of a deflection, but just, you know, he just has that presence of mind just to pull back a few yards, get himself on the D, and he's not shy of shooting. So I think United, it's been a great week for them. They obviously beat Brighton on Tuesday emphatically, then they watched Leicester and Chelsea lose, and then they'll be happy to see Liverpool thumped, even if it was against Manchester City, their neighbours. But we know the United supporters would rather see Liverpool suffer than Manchester City. So I think they'll definitely be fancying their chances of closing the gap on the top two next season. And, you know, they might even bring in one or two more players before the start of next season as well.
Your second last headline this morning, Phil, is Arsenal no longer part of the Wolf Pack. So you're obviously expecting Wolves to get the job done against Arsenal tomorrow night. Is this a Champions League chasing six-pointer, or is that very generous on the prospects of Arsenal?
No, I think it's very generous on the prospect. If Arsenal win, all that's going to do is just put a dent in Wolves' pursuit of a Champions League place. As I said, we've obviously talked about Manchester City. That Court of Arbitration for Sport ruling in a couple of weeks is going to have a massive impact. Obviously, teams are trying to get into the top four because we don't know. You could finish fifth and think you're going to be in the Champions League, and then the ban could get overturned, and then you miss out in Champions League. So as things stand, we've got four teams chasing two spots, and Wolves are looking good. You know, they were a team I feared for at the start of the season, given the fact that they started the season so early with the Europa League qualifiers. I think the break has suited them. They're not conceding goals. They're even leaving Traore on the bench for certain games, and then he comes on and just causes havoc. So I think the thoughts of Adama Traore getting a run at that Arsenal defence is fairly frightening for Gunners fans.
Yeah, it certainly is. And then last one is also a Champions League headline. What I'm seeing here is Leicester back on course to lock down Champions League place.
Yeah, obviously Leicester got the news that they can play at the King Power, even though Leicester is in lockdown. And I think this is actually a good game for them. And the second half was a lot more encouraging. They were pretty poor in the first half against Everton, but he brought on James Maddison, who obviously had a bit of an injury. He didn't show any signs of it in the second half at Goodison Park. Kelechi Iheanacho came on and gave Jamie Vardy a bit of help. And we know how good Vardy is, but you take away that space in behind him and he's not as effective. So I think this is the kind of game that they'll probably win, but I'm still not sure if Leicester are going to see this out. Are they going to get that top four finish? They could be the team that finishes fifth, and then if City get their ban overturned, they ultimately miss out. But yeah, this is a good game for them. I think Palace will probably just sit in and basically say to Leicester, here's the ball and see if you can break us down. And the signs are from the other night at Goodison that Leicester probably should have enough that they could do it.
Okay, so to wrap up, the headlines are Liverpool still have 100 points inside thanks to home comforts. United could give Liverpool and City a run for their money next season. Bruno Fernandes continuing to pull the strings for United. Arsenal no longer part of the Wolf pack. I think as a, you know, my sub-editing advice to you, Phil, is go for W-O-L-V-E. It says W-O-L-F here, so maybe you can edit that before Monday morning. And Leinster back on course to lockdown Champions League place. Just before we let you go, Phil, Tottenham Hotspur last night, Jose Mourinho complaining about VAR. Of course, that is the big story this morning, and definitely not the case that Spurs are in a bit of bother. And despite having basically a full preseason, Jose Mourinho hasn't exactly managed to steer the ship the way he wants it to go.
No, and actually, funny enough, there was moments in the first half where I thought, you know what, if he can sort out his defence, there's serious potential, because obviously Bergwijn's come in, and Son, Moura, Harry Kane, you've got Sissoko there. You've got players that can play really well on the counter-attack. So, unfortunately for Mourinho, and it's just something that you don't associate with the Mourinho of the past, is he's playing with a team that doesn't have a solid defence. And we saw that in the United game when they were 1-0 up. They couldn't see it out. And obviously, he's leaving Alderweireld on the bench instead of Dier. And that's one that's a head-scratcher, because whatever about Vertonghen and Alderweireld playing as a partnership, you know, I think Alderweireld's a much better option than Eric Dier. Every day of the week, I'd be going for that. But I can understand Mourinho's frustration with VAR, by the way, but it's actually more the handball rule. It's an absolute ridiculous rule that Lucas Moura gets pushed over, a ball is kicked off, and he doesn't know anything about it, and the ref rules it out. But we saw the same with the Mahrez goal that was ruled out last night as well for Phil Foden's handball. It's a ridiculous law that was brought in. The only way you can counter it, it seems, is to put your arms in, tuck them into your jersey and not have them out. And then obviously you can't play football properly.
It's quite the week for VAR, all told. I mean, you're missing the fact that Jose Mourinho is a class act, Phil. The biggest event last night, where he, like his big hug for Chris Wilder, I thought they were going to sort of get it on at one point. It was very intimate moment.
Who doesn't like Chris Wilder? Chris Wilder seems like one of the most popular managers in the Premier League. But it's classic Jose, obviously taken away from the fact that his side were beaten by a team that were in really poor form going into the game. Don't score many goals. And they went 3-0 up on Spurs. And yeah, not good. And we know Mourinho is all about the second season. But, you know, the reason Mourinho's at Tottenham is not because Tottenham is a job that really he wanted, but it was probably the only job that he could get in terms of a team at the time with a chance of getting Premier League or Champions League football. They were obviously still in the Champions League, but I think it's come a few years too late. And I think Daniel Levy loved the idea of being able to get Jose Mourinho, but I think, as I said, it's a few years too late.
Yeah, come on, Phil. Enjoy the football over the weekend.
OTB AM. This is OTB Sports Radio.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.